Hello and welcome on to the Who's On Podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. Recording a little early this week with the Thanksgiving travel coming up ahead of course, the Commonwealth clash with Virginia and Virginia Tech, both going into this game at 5-6 and needing a win to get bowl eligibility or your season is done. And to talk about all that, I have got Andy Bitter from Tech Sideline, longtime beat reporter on Virginia Tech, part of our sister network, part of the Sports War Network at Tech Sideline. Andy, thanks for coming on today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Awesome. All right. Well, it feels like a little bit of deja vu because it is. This is the seventh time since 2012 Virginia Tech is going to enter this game at 5-6. Only the second time, though, that both teams enter at 5-6. Just how do you kind of view this rivalry game coming into it with these kind of stakes?
Well, there was one year they were 4-6. They needed to beat Virginia just to get to that Marshall game. But yes, under 500 coming to this game. It'll be interesting. This is certainly not the season either team had hoped for. Hokies had ACC title aspirations coming into this. And I think UVA, after the start that they had, was hoping that they wouldn't be playing for their bowl life here. But here we are. And this is a very familiar situation, it feels like. Certainly for Virginia Tech, seems like they've been sort of stuck in this mediocrity for the last 13 years, basically. And it's like the 8 p.m. game on the ACC network. It's just like, oh man, this is what you're closing the night with, is this game between 5-6 teams. Like, whoever wins gets to go play a bowl game in like a baseball stadium, and whoever loses doesn't get to go to a bowl game at all. Like, I don't feel like the stakes are that huge, but throw the records away, I guess, when these two teams meet.
Yeah, the prize is not quite like a trophy or anything like that. It's more of just kind of like a ribbon saying, hey, here you go. In those seven games, Hokies 7-0, of course. That's not that surprising, seeing the record over the past couple decades. The one game that they were both 5-6 in 2014, Virginia Tech won that one 24-20. Interesting enough, that's only one of four one-possession games in Blacksburg since 1998. Again, we have that 26-year streak going on since Virginia's last win at Lane Stadium. But one-possession games, pretty interesting for Virginia Tech these days.
Yeah, they are not good in them under this new staff. 1-12 under Brent Pry. They've lost 8 straight, 0-5 this year in one score games. And, at a certain point, that's not an accident anymore. I mean, they've just struggled whenever it's tight. It's 0-5. Maybe I gave them one too many. I have to go back and look at the schedule. They might be 0-4, whatever they were. They're winless in one score games this year. And, sometimes you can chalk that up to luck, but when it's happened 12 times out of 13, I think it's past that point of luck. I think you're looking at a skill issue, and that points directly to coaching staff. What are you doing to win these close games, or doing the little things to steal a possession at halftime, or get points before halftime, or come out of halftime on fire or something like that, or know how to manage the clock at end of game situations? And this seems to be something that, Brent Pry and his staff have struggled with. And, you mentioned the rivalry here. I mean, that was something that, Tech fans used to make fun of UVA over when Mike London was the coach. It was not one of his strengths, to the point that they basically brought in, Tom O'Brien to be a, sideline Sherpa for him, to tell him how to do stuff with the clock. And, it might not be a bad idea for Virginia Tech, because it doesn't seem like Brent Pry is learning over these 3 years.
I don't know if it worked, but they certainly.
No, it was an effort. It was an effort, at least. They tried to do something to address it. And I feel like the Hokies might need to do something to address, if it's like an assistant to the head coach or whatever it is, whatever the current setup is, they're just not managing games well, and it's costing them some wins here.
Virginia's record in those types of games, not sterling either. They lost 5 of those last year, and they kind of got over the hump a little bit earlier this year with the comeback at Wake Forest, also another comeback against Boston College. As of late, they would probably kill for some one possession games, because it's been 20 point blowouts at home against North Carolina, on the road at Notre Dame, and then yet again at home against SMU. I want to kind of paint this game, just kind of what it means for each side to either win or to lose this game. And we could start with what does a win mean for Virginia Tech this season? Obviously a season that didn't quite meet expectations.
I mean, it's a sigh of relief, because the alternative is not making a bowl game when you had ACC title game aspirations before the season. Virginia Tech has lost once in this game in the last 19 tries, and it put Justin Fuente on the hot seat. It put him on notice after that season. They don't take kindly to losing this game. So I think it's less about winning this game, is not losing this game. It's an expectation to go in there and win this one, because if you lose it, I mean, man, and then on top of this, not even making a bowl game this year, to finish the season the way they have, they'd be 0 for 4 in November. Just completely collapse down the stretch, would lose to their rival, would not make a bowl game. It'd be a pretty rough season for Brent Pry. I don't think it means, he's getting fired or something like that, because I think just financially it doesn't make a lot of sense to make any kind of change. But man, that is going to be an uncomfortable offseason, and a lot of changes I think would need to be made. I think there's still probably some that need to be made, but a lot would have to happen after that.
Yeah, I just read a story up on the saber.com now just about not only the importance of this game. Obviously, there's importance always in the rivalry game, but also just kind of putting into perspective what it means for a win and for a loss for Virginia. I think almost all is forgotten with a win. You can talk about all those recent losses and this quarterback situation that Tony Elliott didn't want to turn into a controversy, but is now full-blown controversy, especially with the fan base. And I think almost all can be forgotten if they just got to a bowl game, because unlike Virginia Tech, that has been a much harder goal to attain for Virginia. And Elliott talks about wanting that to be the floor for the program. Well, you're below the floor now, so I don't know where you're at, if you're in the foundation, if you're in the under earth underneath the house, but you're still working your way up there. A loss, and you got a lot of uncomfortable questions going into the offseason, especially with your quarterback situation. Is Anthony Calandria a long-term starter for you at this point? What do you do with the offensive staff after they have just kind of plateaued? If you look at the numbers, they are almost exactly where they were last year. The only difference is they don't pass for as many yards and they run for a little bit more yards. So that's the only difference. And I think even more dangerous for Virginia is apathy, is no one cares anymore. And that is a very real possibility if this game goes the way many expect it to.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting for UVA because it'd be such a bonus to win this game. I mean, they've won it, what, twice in the last 25 years? I mean, twice in a quarter century. That's a tough drought there. And I've covered this game quite a bit, and I've seen one of the victories. And I was down on the Virginia Tech sideline. I go down the press box the last couple of minutes, kind of get some color for your story. And I'm standing there and I'm looking around, and the clock's ticking off, and the outcome is obvious at that point. I'm looking around and I see all the students like starting to line up on the hill and the edge of the seats. I'm like, I'm gonna get run over here in a second if I don't get out of the way. Like, and they stormed the field, and it was a big celebration, and like it was meaningful to a lot of those people. I mean, there were like teenagers that were out there that were on the field that were like celebrating with their families for the first time. They'd never seen it in their lifetime. So I mean, it was a very big deal. As big of a deal as it is on the negative side for Virginia Tech to lose that game, I think it's as big of a deal for UVA to win that game. And you're right. I think it does cover up a lot of the complaints about other things, other shortcomings with the program right now. So if they could get to a bowl game and you beat your rival at the end of the season, something you don't do often, I think that's a very good step for that program.
Funny enough, that is not the Virginia Tech game I got run over in. That was the 2021 one when Virginia Tech students were the ones storming the field in Charlottesville. That's the one where I did not quite see that coming. And all of a sudden, I just see hordes of people running past me while I'm trying to get a shot of, JC Price right before he popped the cigar in after the game. Little injury update. I think both teams kind of struggling coming down the stretch. First for UVA, Xavier Brown, their running back, is out for the season with a broken collarbone that he suffered against SMU. Took a couple big hits in that game. They're also down Kobe Pace, who is day to day with a knee injury. So they could be down to their third and, well, I mean, technically fourth string running back, because that's what he started the season as. They're down their top three running backs already. If Kobe Pace cannot play, so Noah Vaughn would be the choice there. Kempton Shine, starter cornerback, he's day to day as well. And then Noah Josi, their starting left guard, also day to day. So not only did you lose, you got really banged up in the process, but Virginia Tech at least has some injury issues at quarterback coming into this one.
Yeah, a real question about who's going to start in this game. I would not expect Kyren Drones to play. He did not dress at the Duke game. He's got a knee brace on his right knee. I just think where he's at injury wise, kind of had both wheels dinged up a little bit here down the stretch. I'd be shocked if he played, let alone dressed for this game. But the backup, Colin Schley, started Duke and got knocked out in the end of the first quarter of that game. And I don't know exactly what the injury was, but they walked him back to the locker room with a jacket over his head. So is that a concussion? Are they trying to limit the light that he's seeing on the way there? It seems like that might be it.
Infer what you want. Yeah.
And if that's the case, then it's not like, oh, how much pain tolerance can you have? There's actual like protocols that you need to clear along the way to get back in the game. So who knows with that? And it could very well be Pop Watson, the third stringer, which, he looked all right in the Duke game. He looked capable going out there. He led the offense to three scoring drives in that game, and certainly not the reason they lost that game. So it's not a great situation to be in, but I think a lot of teams are in a lot worse shape if they get down to their third quarterback than it seems like what Virginia Tech's at this point.
Yeah, Pop Watson, from what I understand, had some excitement coming out of high school. And obviously, with Kyron Drones coming in, and then they bring in Colin Schley in the offseason to kind of be that backup. What are expectations, I guess, if he is kind of thrust into the starting job?
Yeah, dual threat guy. So, he threatens you on the ground again. He showed a lot more confidence passing the ball than I thought he might have in that Duke game. His first pass, he zipped it right in there and put in the right spot in a zone for Ollie Jennings to go down and catch the ball for a first down. So I saw that. I go, okay, well, this guy's not going to be intimidated by this situation. So he went out there and I think he ran the offense pretty well. He was sacked 8 times. And that's in three quarters of action basically, and that's part of Duke's game plan. They saw blood in the water, and they're like, okay, we're going to go after this guy on every single play. It's 8 sacks, 14 tackles for a loss in that game, and that's doesn't say a lot about Virginia Tech's offensive line, which has been a weak spot over the years. But I think some of that is on a young quarterback too, and knowing when to get rid of the ball, knowing when you just got to eat it on a play and do what you can to dump it off to somebody underneath, even if it's not going to get a first down the field. So I think that's what you look at with a young quarterback like that, is how does he handle the game? How does he go out there and understand situations and when to dump it off, when to get out of the pocket and stuff like that. And that just comes with game reps. You're going to get that with anybody.
Obviously, Bashal Tutin, one of the top running backs in the conference, he came back from injury. I think Brent Pry said that, he wasn't 100%. How would you kind of rate him and where he, what he looks like at this point?
Well, he played the whole Duke game, which is more than he could do against Clemson a couple weeks ago. Got 18 carries in the game, 89 yards. Duke's defense is pretty good, so that's all right. Ripped off a 29-yard touchdown at the end where he looked pretty quick, and he had a quick first step and got through there and found the end zone. So even if he's not 100%, I think he's back and he's playing, and that's a 1,000-yard rusher that you're going to have. And he had a big game against the Hoos last year. He had the kickoff return for a touchdown, another touchdown as well, I believe. So I would expect him to play. And even if he's not 100%, I think he's pretty close or close enough that he could be pretty effective out there.
And not 100% Tootin is probably still better than a lot of ACC running backs out there, bar a few. Overview on Virginia Tech season. I know we talked about it a little bit before on the show. We do a big take, a BIG capital take. What's your big take from the overall season so far?
I mean, it's not a shocking take, but it's been such a disappointment based on the talent that they have. And I'm looking at this team, and they've got a national semifinalist for a bunch of defensive awards in Antoine Powell Ryland. They've got a first team defensive tackle, all ACC probably, and Aeneas Peebles. I've got a couple cornerbacks and Dorian Strong and Mansoor Delane that are probably going to get drafted. They have four big receivers that I think could be a go-to guy on a lot of teams out there. They have a 1,000-yard rusher and Bashal Tootin is going to get drafted. They've got a stud at left tackle, I think, and Xavier Chaplin and return Kyron Drones at quarterback. And here they are, 5-6 at the end of November. I mean, there's no other way to categorize this team than to say they've been an utter disappointment. And if it weren't for Florida State and every the clown show that's going on at Florida State right now, I think you'd be looking at Virginia Tech or NC State as the biggest disappointments in the ACC. For some reason, the results are not equaling the kind of talent they have on the team. And I don't know if that's chemistry issues, I don't know if that's coaching issues, perhaps a combination of a couple. I think that's always kind of the case. But whatever it is, they haven't reached their potential this year and haven't even come close to that. Now we'll see. I mean, they finally came together in last year's UVA game. You saw what the final score was. They played a really great game in that one. Might be more of a challenge this year with your third string quarterback potentially being the starter. But I think there's talent on this team. They just haven't really tapped it for most of the season for some reason.
Yeah, I was mentioning too, obviously, the legendary David Teal and also Greg Medea from Daily Progress. I was like, how lucky is it for programs like Virginia Tech and NC State that they have these really bad, disappointing seasons the same year that Florida State, the wheels just completely come off the bus? I mean, it seems like, Virginia Tech and NC State are competing to see who the biggest disappointment is if it weren't for Florida State.
And Florida State's doing it, and like everybody wants to hate Florida State because they were the ones all off season just creating this ruckus about we're so much better than the ACC. So I think there was just such schadenfreude watching this team just stink all year. Like you just like this is glorious. Like somehow they beat Cal. It's like, man, if they were winless going into that Charleston Southern game, that would have been just fantastic. And now they got Florida. Suddenly Florida is competitive coming up in this finale. I don't like the Seminoles' chances in this. It's such an incredible fall from grace that I think the other 16 teams in the ACC just take utter delight in because they were really annoying in the last offseason for the last 12 months.
And who as a college football fan could have predicted that Florida would be sitting in a better spot than Florida State at the end of the
Well,
season?
yeah, I thought Napier was might get fired. I mean,
In the middle of the year.
you don't get a lot of time at Florida to turn things around. They are pretty quick about firing guys. So, good for him for getting over a little bit of a hump here. I don't know how safe he is long term, but certainly safe going into the offseason. They've already said that, and then to get some wins here at the end of the year. Didn't look good in that Texas game. Didn't they get run off the field by Texas after they announced he was coming back? I
Yeah,
think
I
it
think that
was.
was the next game. Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe bad timing with that, but to win the games they have and beating Ole Miss just recently, and probably safe for another year at least.
At least, yeah. Looking at, is there a player that surprised you either, I guess, positively or negatively how they performed this year? You mentioned the amount of talent that Virginia Tech has, and it is surprising to see where they're at with some of the guys that they have on this team.
Yeah, I mean, offensively, I'd say a guy that's surprised a little. I think he had a potential for a breakout was Aiden Green, wide receiver. I think he's shown some things out wide, and that's a tough receiver room to crack this year with the number of veterans they had, but he's done it. And they've given him the ball and he made some impact, scored a touchdown on a reverse against Duke, and has looked pretty good. He's had some drops in there that, I think he obviously wants back, but you're going to get that with a young player. But I think he's the future at wide receiver. For this team. And then defensively, I think kind of a guy in a similar situation, Caleb Woodson, who was not a starter coming into the year, but has sort of darted up to that top Will linebacker spot. And, Brent Pry talks about him all the time, and he knows linebackers pretty well. And he's liked how he's progressed, and he's jumped into a starting spot. And I think he's going to be a mainstay there for the next couple of years.
I would add on the Virginia side, looking at Anthony Britton on the defensive line. Obviously, Jason Hammond was a start at the beginning of the year. He's out for the year with a shoulder injury. Big guy out of the 757 area, a place that Virginia has not recruited well over the year, but they got one with Britton. Big guy who's performed well and is kind of you've seen his stock kind of go up as the season progresses. Offensively, Chris Tyree, the transfer from Notre Dame, has not performed it in any way, and it seems weird at times where he's out there on kick return and he muffs the opening kickoff against Notre Dame, and he has tons of issues against Richmond in the opener, and it just never seems like he's found his way. He's been injured off and on too, and they keep going with him, and I've been wondering if they'll make a switch because they have some young guys behind him that are ready to play, guys like Zadarian Harrison and Cam Courtney. But they're proceeding with Chris Tyree, kind of give him every chance because he does have real speed. The question is if can he get the ball in his hands and hold on to it and kind of make a play from there.
Yeah, the flip side on Virginia Tech, a couple guys that, maybe haven't lived up to expectation. I mean, you look at Kyren Drones. I think there were high expectations for him this year. No, I don't think he's going to play in this game coming up, but they kind of tried to turn him into like a pocket passer early in the season. They weren't didn't feel like they were using him right. And then the Miami game, they sort of did. And then he got hurt shortly after that. It was hobbled going into that Georgia Tech game and never really was the same after that. So this almost sort of feels like a lost season for him. And as a result, I think Daquan Felton, out wide was a guy who scored. I think he scored a touchdown last year in the UVA game. Everybody for Virginia Tech
Yeah.
scored a touchdown in that game. So
It felt
I
like
think Felton
it.
did, but he's just has not got a huge share of targets. There have been a lot of games where he's just been shut out in terms of catches. And he was a guy, 6'4", 6'5", can stretch a defense, a pretty good deep ball guy, can go up and make catches over teams. They have not found a way to incorporate him into the offense consistently. And I feel like that is another one of those coaching staff failures, because I think he's got a great deal of talent out there. They got to find a way to use it.
Moving into kind of the predictions and looking more at this matchup now, what is one matchup that you have your eye on, whether it's, on offense for Virginia Tech or on defense?
Yeah, it's probably APR at defensive end against whoever UVA's throwing out there offensive line wise. He can get sacks in bunches now. I mean, he's got 15 on the year. He's had four in a game twice. So when he kind of gets rolling and gets in that backfield, like once he gets one, it's like it gets going downhill and he starts getting more and more. So I think he's a guy who could, single-handedly kind of blow up a game plan for the other team. That's not to say there aren't other guys on the defensive line, but a lot of it is about rush lane integrity and making sure the guy doesn't escape. And APR seems to be the one that's getting home more than those other guys. So I think UVA's got to have a plan for him. And even if you have a plan, he might still make some plays off the edge.
Yeah, I don't know what the plan is on the offensive line at this point. That's the one I highlighted. It's just UVA protecting the quarterback, whoever it is. Leaning Anthony Calandria, of course, as Tony Elliott just kind of backed him at every step of the way here. And Tony Musket never got off the bench against SMU, so probably expecting Anthony Calandria to be the starter. But yeah, Anton Powell-Ryland leading the ACC in sacks, second nationally behind actually a former Virginia guy, Mike Green, who transferred to Marshall. But that's another story for another day. That's the one I'd be concerned about. I was impressed earlier this season. The guy he's tied atop the ACC with is Donovan Ezra-Okwu, from Boston College. Virginia did a really good job blocking him, and that was left tackle Mikhail Boley, one of his first starts back after being injured. And they kind of held him to one sack, although it wasn't really a sack. And I've gotten into arguments with people about should it be counted as a sack if the quarterback's running towards out of bounds and then just decides to step out of bounds himself without getting really pressured or pushed out of bounds. This has been a big, I've had a lot of issues with stat keeping this year and just how we count things. I don't know if you've seen anything similar on your end.
It's like intentional grounding penalties. You get APR actually has 13 sacks. I just looked at, I said 15. He's got 13 on the season.
13.
But if you're the closest guy when the quarterback just kind of like trips and falls in the
Yeah.
backfield, like, well, that's a sack. It's like, okay, I guess we'll give it to you there. Intentional grounding, I guess that's maybe a little more understandable because you're the one closest to him that
Yeah.
forces it. But there are some interesting sacks that come out of that stuff.
It's like a quarterback draw that Calandria took last week, and they counted that as a sack too. And I was like, it was very clearly a run. Like someone's got to see that.
Right. Well, yeah, and then it's stupid that they count quarterback sacks as rushing yardage. It's like we can't divide those or something. Like Pop Watson had 52 yards in gains against Duke and had negative yards rushing because he was sacked 8 times in that game. So it's like that doesn't really tell you the story of how he was running the ball against Duke.
We need like a stat keeping summit. But anyway, yeah, seventh in the ACC in sacks for Virginia Tech, which is kind of surprising with, how well Powell Ryland's been doing. UVA, we've mentioned they've had a lot of trouble keeping the quarterback upright. UVA has allowed 24 sacks in their last four games. And they've kind of been looking like, maybe this offensive line has really taken a step this year. And I think it's tough to determine. Is it more, that the offensive line is now regressing as the season goes by? And, they've kind of had to mix and match a little bit, in the North Carolina game when they had 11 sacks, they were without their all ACC center and Brian Stevens and had to move their left guard to center and were without the right guard. So it was all kind of mishmashed together. So is it more the offensive line is regressing, or is it more that Anthony Calandria is just taking some really bad sacks, or maybe just can't see over the offensive line to, make a throw or throw the ball away? I mean, like I mentioned, some of those sacks are when he's running towards the sidelines, and instead of throwing the ball out, he just takes a one yard loss and steps out of bounds, and it's being counted as a sack. So it's a little bit of here and there with that, and I'm not sure. I'm not sure if what the solution is there. And it seems like, they haven't really figured it out in the past couple of games. So if, as you say, if APR gets rolling, it seems like he's going to have a pretty good day out there.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And last year, I mean, Virginia Tech lived in the backfield in that game and just made life miserable. Calandria took some hits in that game, if I remember correctly, last year. So will be interesting to watch. And that rattles quarterbacks' decision making too, and confidence when you're getting that kind of pressure. So definitely a key to the game for UVA is to keep Calandria upright, because I mean he's a gunslinger. I mean, he'll throw it around and he'll chuck it deep. And as you saw last week against Duke, Virginia Tech gives up some passes, some big plays like that. I mean, the opportunities are there, but you got to give the quarterback time to get it out.
One thing I would watch too, and I guess this could be a player to watch, is if Trel Harris plays. He's the transfer from Kent State who kind of is their only deep threat on the roster, and he's been out since week three against Maryland. And without him, they have not had anyone that can stretch the field. He's started warming up against SMU, so he could be coming back soon. Virginia Tech would be his fourth game, so he could still preserve the red shirt too if he wants to come back next year. And as I was talking, I guess bowl games don't count towards, your eligibility in redshirting. So he could still do that if they won. He could still play in a bowl game too. So we're expecting him to maybe make a comeback this week. But again, as I said, we're recording early in the week, so no idea what Tony Elliott's going to have to say on that. But that could help. Players to watch now. Who is your player to watch offensively for Virginia Tech?
Well, I gotta say the quarterback, because it's so key, and I'm gonna say quarterback generically because I don't know who it's gonna be. Regardless of who plays, when it's gonna be probably a backup in Schley or the second backup in Pop Watson, and everything in the offense has to be geared around that player having a chance to be successful in the game. They have to game plan it correctly, and perhaps if they know more about Schley early in the week, they can game plan more towards Pop Watson being the guy, and maybe offer him a little bit better protection on some plays, or scheme it up that you're going to keep more guys in like that. But I don't think Virginia Tech has the defense this year to just go out and win like a 10-0 game. I mean, there was that one in, I think, 2017, I think it was. It was a really bad offensive game, and I think it ended up 10-0 in
Yeah,
that game.
everyone in the press box looked that one up because Virginia was close to getting shut out again for the first time since that game.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And I don't think they have a defense capable of doing that. You look at the rankings, and they just give up too many big plays to be considered in that class. And that was a great defense that the Hokies had that year too. But they're going to need to score some points, and they're going to need somebody to facilitate that on the offense. So the quarterback's got to do it. And whoever it's going to be, they got to be able to be the maestro out there. So we'll see who it is.
How much has it changed, I guess, between drones, Schley, and Watson, just offensively and kind of what they're doing out there?
I don't think too much, because they're all mobile guys. They can all move. Again, I just think it comes down to what they're comfortable with and what they're capable of. And Schley could move in the pocket, and he could move away from trouble, and he understood where it was coming from because he's played college football for 6 years. And that's how they got that touchdown. He stepped up in the pocket and he found Ollie Jennings last week for a 65-yard touchdown. Pop Watson just doesn't have that timer in his head quite yet, and it's small sample size, so I don't want to draw some firm conclusion after watching him play for 3 quarters against Duke. But you're down there in field goal range before halftime, get sacked, play right after that, guy blitzes off the corner, gets another sack, loses the fumble, and you miss out an opportunity on 3 points. I think maybe a more veteran quarterback in that situation knows, I just got to get rid of this, or sense that somebody's coming for your blind side, and just sort of have that internal clock going on. And that just wasn't there last week.
For Virginia, I think you could say the same thing. It's quarterback. If they stick with Anthony Calandra, is he the same quarterback we've seen over the past six, seven games? You could say just kind of how, depending on how you want to frame it. Some people will focus on the last four games since the North Carolina game, and some will focus more on, kind of the season as a whole because it's kind of plateaued and then kind of started to go down a hill. I'll go a little bit different outside of quarterback though. If you're down to your third string running back, that's obviously a spot to keep an eye on because Virginia was pretty limited in that second half because they didn't have the running backs to be able to do much. But Noah Vonn's a guy that Tony Elliott has liked a lot. He said he's the most complete back on the roster. Just didn't play a bunch to begin the year because of he was dealing with an injury. But 10 carries for 40 yards. Wasn't great, but SMU's got a pretty good run defense. So he was able to kind of squirt through the hole and get a couple yards here and there. So if he can do enough to kind of still give them some semblance of a run game to help, Anthony Calandria find some yards through the air, I think that would be huge. Defensively, I think we've talked about APR. Is there anyone else?
Yeah, I just think linebacker play has to be good on a whole for Virginia Tech. That's been the biggest struggle there is just, run fits and being in the right spot, and they have some coverage issues. I think when they're getting good play out of their linebackers, they're a pretty tough defense. And last week, Keyonte Jenkins made some plays at star linebacker. Kelly Lawson played a little star linebacker on the outside and played pretty well. That is a playmaking position. And when Jenkins has played well and really, shined in that spot, I think the defense takes off. So I would probably point in that direction. If you see strong play there, that's probably going to be a good sign for this defense overall.
I'd go in a similar way. Cam Robinson, the linebacker for Virginia, one of the few 4 stars on the roster, he barely played. He was kind of a bit part player against SMU. They would bring him in on some pass rushing situations, just a blitz. But he is hobbled, and he's been hobbled for a few weeks now. Seems like he picks up a different injury every week. So Tony Elliott's, kind of keeps saying, he's probable or he's questionable going into the game. What level of health is he at? Because especially with mobile quarterbacks, you'd love to have an athlete of his caliber, because the guys that they have at linebacker without him, Trey McDonald, Dorian Jones, not bad athletes, but not great athletes, kind of average athletes. And so you're going to need some good athletes to get in there and, make some stops against, Tootin if he's going, and whichever mobile quarterback they want to throw out there. All right, everyone's favorite time. It's time for predictions. Hokies, a 7.5 point favorite in Blacksburg. Are they getting the job done?
I think they're going to win this one. You can't pick Virginia Tech to win a close game, though, right? I mean, that's where you get in trouble. So I'm going to pick them by 9 points in this game. I'll say something like 30-21. It's Monday. I reserve the right to change my score pick by the end of the week on Tech Sideline here. But I think I'm going in that range, because that's as small of an increase over a one score game as I can go. So I know the quarterback situation is dicey. I think the roster overall is more talented, and I think seeing how Pop Watson played in relief last week, I don't think this offense just collapses without him like it might with a bunch of teams out there if they get that far down their depth chart at quarterback. So, using history as a precedent here, I think they've owned this rivalry for a while, and I think they'll win this one too.
As I've told people throughout the year, you can't rely on a win in Blacksburg in the last week of the season. I will, however, go against it just because nothing other than, well, they got to get one at some point. And why not this year? So I'm going to go 24-20, Virginia. Close game. So I'm going to go with what the history tells me with Brent Pry in close games, and go with a close win for Virginia and Blacksburg. It's going to be cold there. That's what I've heard.
Oh, it's going to be miserable. I think it's trending to possibly be the coldest game in Lane Stadium at kickoff that they've had on record. So I don't know
That's
how far
wild.
back that goes, but I mean, hey, listen, it's not an open air press box like UVA, so I'll be nice and warm in the press box. I might have some hot chocolate or something if they have that available. But if you're going to be out there in the stands for an 8 p.m. game where it's going to be, 30 something degrees at kickoff, like you better wear something warm.
It'll be, people don't believe me, but it will be my first time in at Lane Stadium for a game. I have somehow evaded it in the 2 times that it's happened since I started back in 2017 covering Virginia. 2018 was the first year I was covering high school football for that one, and then in 2020, obviously it was COVID, so couldn't travel over there for the game. So it's here now, so we'll see how it goes. First game in Lane Stadium. But Andy, thanks for coming on for the Who's On podcast, and we'll see how it goes. Rivalry game, 5 and 6 teams clashing at 8 o'clock on ACC Network. What's better?
Get some. Get excited for it. Thanks for having me.
Awesome, Andy. Thank you so much. We will be back next week to recap this Commonwealth clash. But until then, we'll see you.